right? Can you?
No, there are areas of strength. And the question is, had I gotten to the Joe Tannenhaus thing or not? Maybe I have.
Yes, I think you have.
Oh, okay. Well, then, other than that, other than Joe Tannenhaus, his political psychology, it's our major areas of strength that come with our association with Harriman College and what might be called public administration or public policy, or urban studies, planning, that kind of thing, where we've cross-listed a number of courses and also recruited faculty in common, sort of joint appointments. Lee Koppelman has been a conspicuous part of that group. He's taught courses for either our department or the Harriman College for at least, I think he came in the late 60s, about that time. And right now, of course, he's sort of full-time.
Full-time now.
Yeah.
And does that mean that he has given up his position as the Bi-County?
Well, no, he's still a chairman of the Bi-County Planning Board, although he's no longer head of the Planning Department of Suffolk County.
I see.
And as I understand it, that's those. I gather that's, according to the paper, that's not quite a paid position, or there's something about, to the extent that he gets any money from one, he's going to subtract it from the other, because he vigorously denies it, what he's called double dipping. And so, but exactly what the financial arrangements are, I'm not quite sure. But he continues to be head of this, as you say, the Bi-County Planning Commission for the whole island.
You have any feeling about the impact of the governor's office on this campus?
Well, I suppose my feeling is one which a number of people share, and it may be based on, I don't know if it's based on hard evidence or not, but Carl, as you know, having started this university in the days of Rockefeller,
yes.
it's hard to appreciate the strategies of the current governor. And certainly he has not been a conspicuous friend of the SUNY system.
No.
And I get the feeling that we are pretty much a stepchild in his list of priorities. Much of this goes back to, again, I go back to my roots in the Midwest, where public education is a very honored thing. And the fact that people go to a private college, you wonder, why do you go to those inferior schools?
Yeah.
And then you come to New York, and it's just the opposite. Why would you go to a public university when you go to Hofstra or CW Post? Attitudes which are just bizarre, but I think it's reflected in the politics of this area. And Cuomo,
the graduate of St. John's.
St. John's just sort of thinks that if you don't go to a private school, and of course the taxpayers support the private schools in a way that just is bizarre to a Midwesterner coming from those great Big Ten schools. And without trying to excuse Cuomo, I think Rockefeller was the exception.
He was a Phi Beta Kappa from Dartmouth.
Yeah, well, I know he was, a school for which I have fond memories, but he was able to see that there's nothing, for some reason, despite coming from Dartmouth, he was able to see there's nothing wrong with the public university. Indeed, the Big Ten and the University of California, where was New York? And Rockefeller had the vision, but...
So did Heald of the Ford Foundation, the Heelder Court.
Yeah.
And Rockefeller, I think, took that report and made it a guide for
yes.
him.
The only thing, if you want a bad, the only thing if you could say bad about Rockefeller, I'm not sure the word bad, because he may have had to do it, but what strangles this campus is the fact that we have 40 parts of the SUNY system. I mean, all these colleges, all politically spread out over the whole state. And so that the total budget for the SUNY system looks incredibly large until you realize that it's going to support many small four-year colleges or community colleges, which probably shouldn't don't earn their money, but politically have to be maintained because they come from legislative districts or senatorial districts. And I suppose when Cuomo looks at the total amount of money which we're spending on higher education, he sees, my God, that's a hell of a lot of money. But in a state like Michigan or Ohio, that money is spent on just two major campuses, Michigan State and Ann Arbor, with a few satellites.
Kalamazoo and...
Well, yeah, in Western Michigan, right, yeah. But it's not the huge number that we have here. And also, Western Michigan didn't get started until Michigan State and U of M were 100 years old.
Yes.
I mean, and Ypsilanti didn't get started until after World War II.
Flint.
And those are just sort of, even Flint, I think, is just an administrative arm of the Ann Arbor campus. I mean, they're, you know, it's sort of the extended classrooms. We'll provide the faculty, and et cetera, et cetera. They're not autonomous administrative units, which each with its own clout in the capital. So for those historic reasons, New York is just sort of stuck with a nine system.
The nine in California are relatively autonomous.
Yeah.
San Diego, Davis,
yeah.
Irvine, Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but they
even though
yeah.
they have come along
yeah.
long after Berkeley.
Yeah.
But you had a standard set at Berkeley, and New York never had
that. That's right, right. You had something to anchor in
yes.
the burgeoning of the campuses.
Right.
And we started from zero, and so that in a way...
Dewey was a graduate of Michigan.
That's right, he was.
And he understood the need for public education,
mm-hmm.
public higher education after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
He's really responsible for the establishment of the university.
Is he? I didn't realize that.
He appointed a commission under Owen D. Young on the need for a public state university.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And that commission's recommendations he forced through.
Mm-hmm.
Against the opposition of the private institutions.
Yeah, I'm sure. Fighting the private institutions.
Well, I think...
You think that does it, Carol?
Yes.
Oh,
do you have any reaction to John Toll's tenure or my tenure?
Well,
from the administrative side.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, Toll, you can always criticize people, and that's easy. Undoubtedly, Toll was a builder, and you got to give him credit for that, and I think people do. I mean, he was very successful in getting money. Whether or not, again, it's so easy to Monday morning quarterback. I suppose the worst thing you can say about Toll, again, from the perspective of 1988, is that the quality of students under his leadership continued to decline, and I don't think he realized that ultimately your graduate programs are going to be based on your undergraduate programs. And if you can't attract good undergraduate students, for whatever it takes to attract them, whether a football team or dormitory facilities or something, that ultimately you're going to pay the price. And I think now we're beginning, we are paying the price in terms of we are the only campus who can't get undergraduate students to come. I mean, Binghamton, other campuses, they're turning them away. Why aren't they coming here? And the answer is why in decisions which were taken way back a long time ago in terms of
what
expenditures of resources. Well, for example, why we're finally building a field house. I'm sure Toll, with his persuasive efforts, could have gotten that over something he did get. I mean, I'm just, those were the days of wine and roses, to quote former Governor Kerry. And but why build a field house when I can get two more physicists to make this into a world-class, world-famous? And he made that decision, and maybe he was right in some sense, but in the short run, he was right. But in the long term, I think those decisions could have been based on the recognition that if you don't have a good undergraduate class that attracts people, and loyal alumni, too, because that's where you're getting your alumni. There's a lot of things that I don't think Toll realized. I'm not sure, perhaps I would have realized them either, but on the other hand, I wasn't being paid to make those decisions. So there are pluses to his tenure, there's no doubt, but on the other hand, I'm sure decisions could have been made which would have made this place into a first-class undergraduate institution as well as a first-class graduate institution. But
I think there's a matter of give and take between faculty and students. And we're a little too close to home for people who want to send their children away, or
yeah,
children who want
yeah,
to go away
yeah,
from home.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some things that no president can, that's one thing no president can do anything about. I mean, that's a given. But I still think that decisions.
And then there's another thing. As I look back at Wesleyan, which is my alma mater.
Yes.
I think in terms of some of the teachers that I had, I remember them quite clearly. Well, if your teachers live in New York City and are out here a couple of days a week, that's a different story. If there is very little faculty life or exchange of ideas, trade in ideas on the part of the faculty on the campus, there's not so much to attract them to stay,
mm-hmm.
Stay on the campus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we've got to work on that.
Yeah, we do. And we've come a long way. I mean, things have improved, I think, quite dramatically since John Toll left on a number of counts. The physical appearance of the campus.
Yes, right.
Jerry Schubel has done great at restoring the faculty dining room.
Yes.
Having convocations. I mean, all those things, they're little things, but see, John Toll never, I mean, he couldn't
be
bothered.
He was too busy with the large structure.
That's right,
which
yeah.
we needed,
yeah,
no question
yeah.
about that.
Yeah. Well, this is fun. Fun to talk about this. You know, I really hadn't. I didn't realize I'd be able to say so much, Carol.
But
you have to have someone sort of press buttons.
Yeah. You
know?
Yes, you have it back in the computer, remember?
Yeah. Just see, you have a nice view here.
Yes, this is nice.
It's a nice office. Oh, Connecticut, you see it well today.
Right. That's nice.
Yeah. Okay, Carol.
Well,
nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
All right.